What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Rabbi Eric Yaffe, immediate past president of the Union for Reform Judaism, the largest organization of synagogues in the world, and now an author and columnist, and the 2014 Bill Gray Scholar here in Tucson. We'll also have a visit from our two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mavina on Israel, Oshrat Barel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. It's rodeo weekend here in Tucson, Arizona, in the heart of the West where I live. So I thought we'd begin with a Western theme this morning. You can't really understand what a big deal rodeo week is here in Tucson unless you live here and have lived here for at least a year or two, or 15, like me. While sometimes in the Southwest we get a little testy about the stereotypes of deserts and cowboys, of cactus and overgrown cow towns we tend to have foisted upon us, occasionally we actually seek out and embrace those stereotypes, and this is one of those times. How do you say yippee-ki-yay in Yiddish? Yippee-oy-vey? Basically, Rodeo Week consists of a big parade, the world's largest non-motorized parade, for what it's worth, followed by, I know this will shock you, a rodeo. We let kids out of school for a couple of days to go to the parade and wear cowboy boots and hats and such, and we generally pretend that we still have some connection to the folks who rode horses and tamed the blazing saddles of the Wild West. To most people in America, let alone Jews, the idea that schools are out for 2 days this week for rodeo, of all things, impresses people as absurd and beyond archaic. Do we close for the county fair? How about Decoration Day? And yet, when you live, as we do, in the heart of the West, not far from Tombstone in what was Apache country not much over a century ago, rodeo is still a pretty big deal. You might not immediately associate Jews with cowboys, but it's worth noting that there were Jews, even in the Old West. The legendary O.K. Corral gunslinger and lawman, Wyatt Earp's common law wife, well, his last one anyway, was a Jewish woman named Josephine Marcus. And there were certainly Jewish mayors and sheriffs and even outlaws. Why, the town of Nogales, not far from here on the border of Mexico, was originally called Isaacson after its Jewish founder. And, of course, those ubiquitous jeans that everybody wears were pioneered by a Jewish guy, Levi Strauss, a Jewish immigrant from Bavaria who came to the gold country in 1850 and co-invented the denim that sat on all those saddles that blazed through the Wild West. He and his partner, another Jewish tailor named Jacob Davis, patented the rivets that hold on the pockets, and they made Levi's the preferred pants of cowboys right up till today. And so, in honor of all those Jewish cowboys and characters, here's a less than perfectly accurate musical version of another one of those legendary Jewish stories of the Old West. Long before saddles blazed across the West, there was the Ballad of Irving. This was requested by a fan of Too Jewish, and here it is, Hi-Yo Silver, the famous Ballad of Irving.
He was short and fat and rode out of the West with a Mogan David on his silver vest. He was mean and nasty right clear through, which was kind of weird because he was yellow too. They called him Irving, Big Irving, Big Short Irving, Big Short Fat Irving. The 142nd fastest gun in the West. He came from the old bar mitzvah spread, schlepping a salami and pumpernickel bread. He always followed his mother's wishes. Even on the range he used two sets of dishes. Irving. Big Fat Irving. Big Sissy Irving. the 142nd fastest gun in the West. Irving. 141 could draw faster than he, but Irving was looking for 143, walked into Saul's saloon like a man insane, and ordered three fingers of 2 cents plain. Irving. Big fat Irving. Big sport Irving. The 142nd fastest gun in the West. The James boys was coming on a train at first sun, and the town said, Irving, we need your gun. Well, that train pulled in at the break of dawn. Irving's gun was there, but Irving was gone. Irving. Big fat Irving. Big help Irving. The 142nd fastest gun in the West. Well, finally, Irving got 3 slugs in the belly. It was right outside the Frontier Deli. He was sitting there twirling his gun around, and Butterfingers Irving gunned himself down. Irving. Big fat Irving. Big dum-dum Irving. Big dum-dum dead Irving. The 142nd fastest gun in the West. Really?
From a recording of yesteryear called When You're in Love, the Whole World is Jewish, that was The Ballad of Irving, redefining the word classic all by itself. All about being Jewish in the Wild West for Rodeo Week. Nowadays, of course, we Southwestern Jews are much more sophisticated and we hope braver than Irving, but some of us still wear Levi's and ride horses for fun, if not for transportation. Enough rodeo silliness for now. A brief word of gratitude to God instead. While the rest of America freezes, we here in Arizona are enjoying springtime and actually wondering why we've had almost no winter at all. This balmy February has been a gift to those of us who live here in the Southwest, which reminds me of a really lovely blessing in Jewish tradition said in appreciation for the natural world. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam oseh ma'aseh v'reishit. Blessed are you, Lord our God, ruler of the world, who makes the work of creation. A good prayer to offer this beautiful rodeo weekend. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll explore the current status of liberal Judaism here in America with our guest, Rabbi Eric Yaffe, the immediate past president of the Union for Reform Judaism and the 2014 Bill Gray Lectureship Scholar in Residence at Temple Emmanuel this coming week. Meet him when we return on Too Jewish. Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics. And they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org. We are delighted to welcome the Too Jewish, our guest this morning, Rabbi Eric Yaffe. He is the President Emeritus of the Union for Reform Judaism, the congregational arm of the Reform Movement in North America, which he led, including all 900 synagogues and 1.5 million Reform Jews from 1996 until 2012. Good morning and welcome back to Too Jewish.
It's good to be with you.
Looking forward to having you here in Tucson, speaking at Temple Emmanuel. What does it feel like to be a president emeritus?
Feels wonderful, actually, because I love the work that I was doing, but sort of the day-to-day administrative burdens are gone, and I can focus on writing and on teaching and lecturing and those great issues in Jewish life that I'm most interested in.
You've been writing regularly for the Huffington Post, for the Jerusalem Post, for Haaretz, for other papers. A great deal of your focus has been on what's going on in Israel and the relationship of American Jews to Israel. Has anything changed dramatically in recent years?
Well, at this moment, of course, we are so focused on the efforts of Secretary of State Kerry. That's a dramatic change. He has put in time and energy with a dedication that no one really would have imagined, and despite all kinds of predictions of certain failure, he is not deterred. And this is really a historic moment, as he comes to the end of the first stage of this process. So I've been following that. I've been writing about that. I was at a meeting with Secretary Kerry just 2 weeks ago with other religious leaders. That right now is the primary issue on the Middle Eastern agenda.
I talked to someone who said it might have been the low expectations that have fueled Kerry's success. Certainly there were low expectations. What do you think has made him, besides his extraordinary hard work, have an opportunity now?
Well, I think the world has changed. The truth of the matter is that the Palestinians are, one would hope, desperate to have a state. They have been in a situation now where they don't really control their own destiny, so the time has come for them to make concessions that they need to make, and perhaps under American pressure they're going to be prepared to do that. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, in many ways, as much as I worry about Israel, and we all worry about Israel, Israel's position right now is very strong, because the countries that surround Israel are in disarray, and so in military terms, there is really no threat to Israel on its border, and it's cutting back its military, it's cutting back the amount of time that people serve in the reserves, because when it looks at security issues, it's in a good position. And then the second thing to think about is much of the Arab world that has been at war with Israel and continues to be at war with Israel is as worried as the Israelis are about Iran. So what that means is the Arab League and the Saudis and so on, despite their troubled history with Israel, understand that at this moment Israel is not really their enemy. So that might create a possibility where the Israelis on the one hand and the Arab League on the other might be prepared to take steps that at other times they would not have been prepared to take. So you put all this together, and maybe, just maybe, it will create the basis for a settlement. I think Secretary Kerry realizes that, and he's pushing very hard.
We will talk much more with Rabbi Ariki Yaffe, not only about Israel, but about American Jews, when we come back on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke International, new sponsors here on Too Jewish. What is Freedom Smoke International?
Thank you, Rabbi Kohan. Freedom Smoke USA is an electronic cigarette company based right here out of Tucson. We were the first store in the United States, the first store to have all FDA-approved products. It's a healthier alternative to cigarette smoking.
No smoke, no tobacco, and doctors refer people to you.
That's correct. My doctor actually just gave me a glowing report from other patients he's had that I've been able to find this as a healthier alternative to smoking.
Cardiologists, pulmonologists, even dentists, huh?
That's correct. It does help with all that.
How many flavors can people get of this?
We have over 700 flavors available.
Where are the locations and how do people get connected?
Our first location is at River and Orange Grove. We opened one at Broadway and Swan, and we currently just had our grand opening at 12th and Valencia.
And we do have a store in Southern Michigan also.
And what phone number can people call?
You can call the toll-free number at 1-800-705-7013. That's freedomsmokeusa.com.
Thank you, and we'll talk some more next week. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or download us from there or at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. The Temple Emmanuel Pilgrimage Trip to Israel with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, is coming June 11th to June 23rd, 2014. If you're interested in going with me on this fantastic journey to Israel, seeing it all from Tel Aviv to Haifa to Tzfat to the Sea of Galilee to Jerusalem, please email twojewishradio18@gmail.com or call 520-327-4501 for more information and an itinerary. I must note that in addition to rodeo, there's another great and only slightly Jewish event this week, the beginning of spring training games, the best way to see a ball game, with the Cactus League throwing out its first pitch this coming, I think it's Wednesday, and in celebration of spring, and to give us a Jewish leg up on spring training ball for the 2014 season, here's Mandy Patinkin's Yiddish version of Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
Mitzvah der Ball game zu eurem Lomir doch gehen. Kauf mir den Nistloch und Cracker Jack. Wir lief kein Mulf und dort nicht weg. Jetzt ist gut, mut die Ballspieler. Es passt nicht, als man verspielt. Weil sie sehen, zwei, drei Streiks neus bei der Baseballspiel.
That was Mandy Patinkin singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game in Yiddish for the coming of baseball's spring training, my personal favorite season of the year. We welcome our Mivina on Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov. Good morning.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
There's been an awful lot in the news lately about Israel adding more units or building in the territories, constructing housing in occupied territories. Can you explain from an Israeli's perspective what that means and what it means? And is there a difference between buildings that go on in neighborhoods of Jerusalem that were annexed after 67? How do Israelis think about this?
This is a complex question, like everything that relates to Israel, I think. But I think there is two different answer for this. On one, and you know that we can't separate it, but I need to separate the answer. So on one hand, like building more units around Jerusalem really answer very severe need, I would say, for young families. You know, Jerusalem getting bigger, I would say. So there is a real need. So there's no any connection to the political issue, I would say. So I can't speak on behalf of all the Israelis, but I can
Nobody can speak on behalf of all Israelis.
No one, yeah. But I can guess that if you will ask Israelis, so some of them will see it differently, that to build like around Jerusalem that really answer need, and or to build around, you know, on a top of a mountain in the middle of
Shomron,
exactly. So this will, like, for some Israelis, it will see like we are actually teasing. Is the right word, or even give me a nicer word for teasing? Like, why to build on a middle of nowhere?
Yeah, it's a provocation. Like,
yeah,
it's you know, deliberate.
Exactly.
We so would this, say a dovka. They're putting
yeah,
it there.
Yeah, and some other Israelis would say, you know, this is our land, and we can build where no one will tell us. No one will tell us where to build. And you know, this is the two different answer that I can give you today.
To go back to the area of Jerusalem, for example, there's a city, Maale Adumim. It was very much in the controversy over the Super Bowl because they had a factory there that SodaStream built some products there with Palestinians and Israelis together. And, oh no, it's on occupied land. Maale Adumim is a city of 40,000 people now. In any final settlement agreement, and it's about 4 miles from Jerusalem, it's very close. And any final settlement agreement, that's going to be part of Israel. It's hard to conceive of anything else. They're going to have to trade some land or something. Does it, when Israelis hear, oh, they're putting up 100 more housing units in Maale Adumim, it doesn't, does it say anything to them? Does that sound like it's a provocation?
Again, it's depend if you're on right or left. If you're on the left, of course you're furious. Then you say, come on, you are not getting, giving any chance for the peace process. But if you're on the right, you said, yeah, it's the right thing to do.
Never simple, as you said.
Yeah.
We'll talk next week, Ashra. Attention, Arizona income taxpayers. You can help send children to our community's Jewish schools without it costing you a dime. Direct your tax dollars to JETCO, J-E-T-C-O, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. Here's how. The state of Arizona allows its taxpayers to get a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations, who then provide scholarships for kids from kindergarten through 12th grade to attend qualified private schools. JETCO helps provide a quality Jewish education to children in need at Congregation Anshe Israel Kindergarten, Tucson Jewish Community Center Kindergarten, Temple Emmanuel Kindergarten, and the Tucson Hebrew Academy. If you pay Arizona state income tax and make your contribution to JETCO, you'll get a 100% tax credit on your Arizona state income tax return. Tax credit's not a deduction. Your taxes are reduced by the amount you give. Join over 750 supporters last year who donated money to JETCO and got it all back in the form of reduced or refunded state income taxes. There's an additional tax credit now, the switcher credit, which increases the maximum donation you can make to JETCO to $1,031 for single filers, $2,062 for married couples filing jointly. When we are fighting every day for the continuity of the Jewish people, we should all take advantage of this great opportunity. JETCO is one way to help foster a Jewish identity for our community's children. Contributions to JETCO have helped hundreds of children receive the financial aid they need to receive a good Jewish education. To direct your tax dollars to Jewish education today, call 520-647-8442, again 647-8442, or visit JETCO on the web at www.jetco.org. Help give the gift of education.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We started talking last week about the Knell, this weird neo-fascist salute pioneered by a French comedian, and then began to explore the phenomenon of deep anti-Semitism that seems to kind of resurface in Europe. You talked about France and Germany and some of the economic factors and the large immigrant population, primarily Muslim in both countries. Let's continue to explore an idea you started to talk about at the end, which is sort of Jews as the canary in the coal mine. When people start to go after the Jews, it indicates something else going on in society, something much deeper.
Right. I think that's important historically, probably for the last two millennia. And I do want to come back to that. But first, I want to say something more general about anti-immigrant sentiment and the resurgence of the extreme right, not only as an anti-Jewish phenomenon, but as a kind of nationalistic, xenophobic, racist phenomenon more generally. It has a longer list of targets than just Jews. And I think that one of the things that Americans often fail to appreciate about Europe and European history is that there's a very strong tradition, particularly in France, but also elsewhere in Europe, of expecting a lot from the state, the central government, in terms of social services, in terms of employment. In France, until quite recently, there were very few major companies that were truly private. They were all called parastatal, in the sense that the state owned 51% or two-thirds or even 90% of major industrial sectors like automobile producing, aircraft production, even toilet bowls. I mean, all kinds of things that would never be part of the public domain in the U.S. in the sense of a publicly traded company means anybody can buy shares in it, but it doesn't mean that the company is actually run by the government or that its executives are appointed by the government. Right. So there's this totally different model, and people look to government for things which in Europe, government is increasingly unwilling or unable to provide. And part of it is European Union legislation that changes the way in which governments relate to the private sector. And part of it is that the European economy has undergone, as has ours, a severe and extended contraction. And unemployment rates are unimaginably high. There are certain countries in Europe where among people under 30, the unemployment rate exceeds 25%.
Yes, yeah, Spain, Greece,
many
others,
countries. Right. And this creates a huge amount of social unrest, dissatisfaction, expectations that the government should step in and save things. And it leads to either the birth of new parties or the strengthening of new parties, often having programs expressing nothing other than anger at the minorities who take away our jobs. Never mind that these are jobs that most quote-unquote true Frenchmen or true Germans wouldn't want to do. And never mind that they would rather collect unemployment from a very generous system than accept those jobs. The target of convenience is foreigners and immigrants. And this prolonged economic crisis over the last, let's say, decade has certainly added fuel to this particular fire in Europe. And next week, we'll come back to the Jews, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, of course, the Jews aren't the immigrants, but we'll see how it fits in. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service, especially for rodeo this weekend. One day, a gorgeous woman gets on the bus, clearly distraught, and sits down next to a guy. She's visibly upset, finally can contain herself no longer. She turns to the man and says, "I just saw my therapist. He says I have a big problem." "What's the problem?" the guy asks. "I can't tell you," she says. "I don't even know you." The guy says, "Well, you know, sometimes it's good to tell your problems to a stranger on a bus." The girl says, "Well, my therapist just told me I'm a nymphomaniac, and I only like Jewish cowboys. By the way, now that you know, my name is Susan." And the guy says, "Hi, Susan. My name is Bucky Goldstein." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. Now, I know we used that story just a few months ago, but rodeo demands that we have a Jewish cowboy joke, and that's the only one I could actually find. And now, a word of Torah. This week, we finish reading the book of Exodus with a portion of Pekudei, which completes the work and the dedication of the tabernacle, the first central place of worship for Jews ever. The purpose of this shrine is a little unclear initially. After all, if God exists beyond time and space and has no physical manifestation, that is, if the Jewish idea of God is right, then why does God need any kind of fixed place of residence at all? Of course, the answer is that it isn't God who needs the tabernacle, or the temple in Jerusalem, or any sanctuary or chapel of any synagogue or temple anywhere in the world at any time in history. It's we who need it. You see, we human beings can think abstractly and say that we don't need ritual or rites, that we are much too sophisticated to require places for prayer, or even to need to pray at all. But when we are alone or in pain, when we are lost, when our minds aren't dulled by television or email or Facebook or the internet or other distractions, we find that we still have spiritual needs. And those needs are not abstract, but concrete. We need a place of solace and separation from the outside world, a location where we can seek God and our own best nature in serenity and peace. In short, we still need a temple, just as our ancestors did, for it is there that we find holiness in a world dedicated to being ordinary. You can, of course, pray anywhere, but having a place of beauty and specific sanctity can make a great deal of difference. Poet Ruth Bryn wrote, "Babel was built to defy deity, to declare the dominion of man. Bricks were passed from hand to hand for a whole year to reach the masons at work on the top of the tower. Thus, when a brick fell, they wept, but when a man toppled to his death, they just turned their backs. The Tower of Babel was built to glorify man, but they achieved degradation and ultimately destruction. The sanctuary was built in obedience to God, in recognition of God's dominion. The tent proved to be far greater than the tower. Hangings of cloth outlasted brick and mortar. In the ark built to the glory of God, we find our own essential glory, righteousness and holiness in imitation of God." That was Ruth Bryn's poem on creating sanctity in space. What is the status of liberal Judaism, and what is its future in America and in Israel? Find out from Rabbi Eric Yaffe, the past president of the Union for Reform Judaism and the Bill Gray Lectureship Scholar at Temple Emmanuel this week, at the U of A Thursday night and at Temple next weekend, when we return on Too Jewish.
Environmental Strategies Incorporated was established in Arizona almost 15 years ago. They're a corporation that's very unique and has distinguished itself as one of the foremost environmental remediation companies in Arizona. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is also a full-service general contractor. The fact that they have two divisions affords their clients the opportunity to work with one contractor to deal with environmental problems as well as their building and remodeling needs. Environmental Strategies clientele range from single-family homeowners to multi-million-dollar Fortune 500 companies. So, if you're in need of asbestos abatement, mold remediation, or general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies at 884-1114. And, if you wish, ask for Ken Goodman, the president. He'd be more than happy to talk with you about your project. That's Environmental Strategies, 884-1114. We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Sid Caesar, the great Jewish comedian who helped pave the way for American comedy as we know it today, died last week at the age of 91. Sid Caesar, born in Yonkers to immigrants from Poland and Russia, began his career playing the saxophone and doing a little comedy work on the side in the Catskills. His breakout gig was the weekly live comedy program, Your Show of Shows. Writers who got their start on the early 1950s sketch show or on Sid Caesar's subsequent follow-ups, Caesar's Hour, or his TV specials, included Mel Brooks, Neil Simon, Carl Reiner, Woody Allen, and Larry Gelbart, all Jewish comedians, writers, and filmmakers who went on to great TV, movie, and stage careers themselves. There is no way today to capture the magic and popularity of Your Show of Shows in the early 1950s. There are legendary stories of everyone piled into a living room of the only person on the block with a TV in those days, watching a little 9-inch black and white screen showing the live TV program. Your Show of Shows pioneered situation comedy motifs and was certainly the father of such later successes as The Dick Van Dyke Show and Saturday Night Live. Inarguably, Carl Reiner said, he was the greatest single monologist and skit comedian we ever had. Television owes him a debt of gratitude for his pioneering work and the great shows he gave us all. Render unto Caesar what is his due. He deserves real applause from the American people. Here's some of Sid Caesar's famous skit with Carl Reiner. Caesar is a Viennese archaeologist.
Like the animals build. When an animal builds something, he builds it strongly and very cheaply.
I see.
Because animals got no money enough.
They're broke, boy.
I got a penny. Even the richest one ain't got a cent. Look at me. What has he got? Just what's on his back, and that's it. So when they build something, they build it. Right, there was a dam that I saw over in Egypt that they built. It was beautiful because, what did they do? They watched the beavers, because the beavers are the best dam builders in the world.
Mel Brooks said, Sid Caesar was a giant, maybe the best comedian who ever practiced the trade, and I was privileged to be one of his writers and one of his friends. Woody Allen wrote of him, he was one of the great comedians of my time. One of the finest privileges I've had in my entire career was that I was able to work for him. If you want to savor a little of the craziness of that Sid Caesar experience, check out the wonderful 1981 film My Favorite Year, produced by Mel Brooks, which captures the mania on the set of a show starring a comedian named King Kaiser. We'll say shalom to one of the great comedians and most influential ones of the 20th century with a little more of his archaeologist routine.
There are many, 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 I understand, unusual civilizations in the course of the world. What would you say is the most unusual civilization you ever came across?
Well, we came across a civilization that was completely matriarchal.
A matriarchal society.
You know what that means?
Yes, where women are in charge.
That's right. Women are all the bosses there, running everything there. They're just, you know, they're in charge. The women, they are in everything. They're the pap, the boss.
Well, where is that?
Cincinnati.
Sid Caesar, Alav HaShalom, still making us laugh. Well, pretty good economic news from Israel. The Israeli economy is likely to grow by 3.4% this year, pushing the country's gross domestic product above the 1 trillion shekel mark for the first time, the Israeli Central Bureau of Statistics said last week. The projected growth rate is exactly the same as the rate last year, but lower than the growth rate of 4.6% in 2011 or 5.7% in 2010. Still, the projection is much higher than the 1.2% growth Israel experienced back in 2009, the first full year after the world financial crisis. Based on international comparisons, Israel's economy is doing very well indeed. The projected average growth rate for developed countries belonging to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development is just 1.2%. Eurobloc economies are actually forecasted to contract by about 0.5% this year. Last year, average growth for OECD countries was 1.4%, while the Eurobloc contracted by 0.5%, and yet Israel grew by more than 3.5%.
Skating to Scheherazade, a piece of music that they've been saving for 2 years. They fell in love with it 2 years ago, but wanted to save it for their Olympic performance.
Who knew that ice dancing was a Jewish sport? American Charlie White, whose mother is Jewish, joined with his partner Merrill Davis and skated into the history books at the Sochi Winter Olympics last week, winning an ice dancing gold medal for the U.S. They are the first U.S. pair ever to win any kind of Olympic skating gold medal. Merrill Davis and Charlie White became the first Americans to win an Olympic ice dance title with a spellbinding performance. Perfect, basically, to the music of Rimsky-Korsakov's Scheherazade. They improved on their silver medal finish 4 years ago. Charlie White said, "To come away with a gold medal is amazing, and 17 years of hard work was justified." I don't know why 18 somehow seems more Jewish, but mazel tov to Charlie White nonetheless. White also won a bronze in the team competition, as did fellow American skaters Jason Brown and Simon Schnapier. Canadian Dylan Moskovich won a silver medal in pairs skating. An interesting tidbit about Jewish Olympic history. While Jews have won close to 350 Olympic medals, including 12 for Dara Torres and 11 for Mark Spitz, until 2002, only 11 of those had ever come at Winter Olympics. But in the past 12 years, covering just 4 Winter Olympics, Jewish athletes have picked up 13 medals. I guess we are getting better on ice and snow. And that's the two Jewish news of Jews around the world. We are delighted to welcome back the Two Jewish, our special guest this morning, a good friend, Rabbi Eric Yaffe, a past guest of Two Jewish several times. He's the president emeritus of the Union for Reform Judaism, the largest organization of congregations in the world, representing 1.5 million Reform Jews in over 900 synagogues across the U.S. and Canada. When he was installed as president in June of 1996, he helped lead the Reform movement back towards a re-engagement with Torah study, with creative and innovative synagogue ritual practice, and a connection to many central Jewish values, including a re-engagement with Shabbat. Now that you've had a couple of years of retirement for perspective, what do you feel were your most important accomplishments as president of the URJ?
Well, as you mentioned, I talked a great deal about Torah study, about the study of our sacred text as being kind of the central theme, not only of Reform Judaism, but of Judaism altogether, trying to kind of change the mentality of American Jews who, you know, really need to understand that study is the foundation on which everything else is built. And while I was only a part of that, many others did it as well. I think we had some success in changing the way that people looked at Jewish life. The second thing is there was this wonderful worship revolution in the course of the last 20 years, and engaged, creative, participatory worship with a new approach to Jewish music became the norm in much of Reform Jewish life. It was a dramatic change from what had happened before. Again, I played only a part in that, a small part, but I was proud to see that. And the third thing that I would mention is we substantially changed our camping system, which grew dramatically during my tenure, our probably single most successful educational effort is the Jewish camping system, which provides a sort of intensive 24-hour experience of Jewish learning. And so we about doubled the number of young people who are in our camps. So those are the things that I look back at with pride and some measure of satisfaction.
You know, I want to follow up on the camping question. You know, I have three kids. They love camp. They come back from camp, and it's not the same, and it never is. We've tried to recreate some aspects of that within our synagogues, but you can never quite do that. Is there some new magic bullet out there for American Jews that will do for adults, for everybody else, what an immersion in a URJ camp did or does?
And the answer is maybe. I think, you know, intense immersion experiences are very important. And I think what we've learned in the American Jewish community over the last 30 years that applies to adults as well. I mean, you can't take adults away for 2 months. Right. But for two or three or four days, our biennial experience, for example, where every 2 years we bring together Reform Jewish leaders from across the country, is, in fact, it's Jewish camp for adults. That's what it is. And in many cases, it really, you know, serves that purpose. It renews them and reinvigorates adults. I think, you know, creating those kinds of experiences throughout the year is something that's possible. And in some measure, of course, Shabbat should be kind of a mini Jewish camp in and of itself. We're once a week, to some extent with family and to some extent with our synagogue community, we look to kind of move away from the world and immerse ourselves both in celebration and in study. It's not easy to do, but we hold that out there as an ideal.
Things are always changing, you know. What's that phrase? Reform is a verb, although you could also say reform is the adjective and Jewish is the verb, as the noun. But things do change pretty rapidly, and the latest Pew study has shown that lots of Jews like to identify as something other than religious Jews, or even as Judaism as a religion. What do you think of those findings? Do they surprise you at all? And how would you answer those kinds of critiques?
Well, the Pew study, which I hope to be talking about a little bit at Temple Emanuel when I'm with you in a few weeks, it was a complicated study. But look, my basic take is this. There was more good news in that study than bad news. And 94% of American Jews said that they are proud to be Jewish. 75% said they have a strong sense of belonging to the Jewish people. 87% said Israel is important or essential. And I look at those numbers and I say those are wonderful numbers. You know, when you look at that, how can you say that this is a disaster? You see a proud and a confident people who want to identify with Judaism in the community. So I begin with the premise that the Pew study was basically good news.
I'll ask a challenging question. What do you think your greatest challenge was as URJ president? What did you feel might be classed as a failure? What would you like to have done over again?
You know, I had this notion that we needed to revive our youth movement. And towards the end of my tenure, I announced kind of a major program and initiative, which since has been taken over by my wonderful predecessor, Rabbi Rick Jacobs.
Your successor, right?
But having said that, I was president for 16 years. I should have done it in the third year and not the 14th year. because we're so concerned. I mean, our young people are wonderful, and they're energetic, and they're creative, and they're open to religious experience. That's my view. But we haven't done what we have to do to connect them to Jewish tradition, to Jewish peoplehood, to Jewish study, and so on. And so I think I waited too long to focus on that. So if I had to do it again, I think I would have done that differently. And the other question was,
is there anything you feel like you failed at?
Well, I mean, that would be it. I mean, it was a total failure. It's not like we didn't have a youth movement. And in the camping dimension, as I said, we did some very, very important things. But building youth, helping synagogues to reach out to young people during the course of the year and create connections with teenagers, that just was not an area where we succeeded in the way that we should have. Rabbi Jacobs is working on that now, but that would be the one area that I would point to. If I had to do it again, I would certainly do it differently. I mean, look, there are many other things. My view is I want all Jews to be committed Jews, and I want them to be studying, and I want them to be praying, and I want them to be engaged in social justice. And, I had many things in that area that I was very proud of, but until every single Reformed Jew is doing those things, then we haven't succeeded and I haven't succeeded.
We are currently in a period in which social media, the use of PDAs for everything, interconnectedness, new apps popping up to connect people in different ways, has led to a real change in the way I think that people even interact in community. These virtual communities change things. Do you think there are specifically Jewish ways to do this? Are there Jewish ways not to do it?
I think that this is a tool. Social media and all the various technology that's now available, it's wonderful. It allows us to do things that we couldn't do before. Ultimately, it's a tool. It's not the essence of Judaism. It's not the heart of the religious endeavor in which we are engaged. But it's something that enables us to do our work somewhat better than we have in the past. It enables us to reach out to people, to be connected to people, to let them know and to invite their opinion in. It democratizes religious life and synagogue life. So that's on the one hand. On the other hand, what it really does is it makes the work of the synagogue more important and not less important. And by that I mean the synagogue itself, the physical experience of being at the building and doing those things that we do together. Because ultimately, religion is about sort of the tactile, face-to-face encounter of people with each other and with God. And there's only so much of that one can do with technology. Ultimately, you need to be there. So technology helps us, but ultimately it reminds us how important it is in our virtual world for us to be across the table with other people engaged in a Jewish search.
What's the favorite thing you've gotten to do since you retired, since you left as head of the URJ presidency?
Of course, spending time with my grandson is without question. That's sort of a given. Beyond that, I spend more time reading and studying every day than I ever could before, and that's wonderful for me. I get to write about things that I really care about, and I sort of have time to try and be thoughtful and put them down, and I write for various publications. Ultimately, though, you write for yourself, trying to sort of articulate those those values that are really important to you. So having the luxury to do that and to focus on teaching rather than administration and HR and all those other things that you do when you're running a large organization, that's been a great and wonderful joy.
I remember early in my career in the rabbinate talking with a rabbi at a very large congregation and talking about all the different activities he's involved in. And I said, so how do you find the time to golf, which is where he did his fundraising? He said, oh, it's very easy. I just gave up studying. I thought a friend of mine was going to physically explode next to me, another young rabbi at the time. But I thought, okay, well, at least he's honest. Is there something not quite right about the professional engagement of so many Reform movement professionals who spend so much time doing their stuff, they don't really have a time to grow for themselves?
Sure. No, absolutely. I read an article maybe 6 or 7 years ago. I used to share it with rabbinical students when I would go there to teach. And it was a rabbi I know, and he's a wonderful guy, and he recently retired, but he talked about the fact that, reflecting back on his career, he said, look, I just don't have time to study. And, you know, I need to be honest with myself and with others. That's just the reality of my busy life. And I remember being shocked. Or sorry, I was shocked that if that's true, why in heaven's name would you say it?
Since you're busy teaching people, and theoretically they're there to study with you.
But beyond that, if you're not confronting the text, if you're not reading the Torah, how do you get through the week? Because how do you renew yourself? Where do you find your ideas and your inspiration? How do you avoid simply repeating yourself over and over again? You know, every Shabbat, every day, every lecture. It's a confrontation with our sacred texts, you know, that gives us what we need in order to be effective rabbis, and in order to have something to convey, in order to connect with God, in order to do those things that rabbis need to do their work. So I think the great majority of us understand that and appreciate it, and for those who don't, I'm utterly puzzled by how they get through the week.
I want to thank Rabbi Eric Yaffe for a great visit here on Too Jewish. He'll be here in Tucson at Temple Emmanuel in the University of Arizona talking about Judaism today in America and Israel. We look forward to it greatly. Thanks again, Eric, for a great visit.
Yeah, great to be with you. And Sam and I look forward to seeing you real soon.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical playoff.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. You can hear more from our guest, Rabbi Eric Yaffe, at the U of A at 7 p.m. this coming Thursday, where he's speaking about Israel and America, and at Temple Emmanuel next weekend at 7:30 Friday night and noon on Saturday. Call 327-4501, area code 520-327-4501, for more information about the Bill Gray Lectureship. And don't forget to join us next Sunday at 9 o'clock. Our guest will be Rabbi Kinneret Shiryon of Congregation Yozma in Modin, Israel, the first woman rabbi at a congregation in Israel, and the winner of the 2013 Kohan Foundation Memorial Award for Jewish Education and Rescue. Our playout this morning comes from Israeli singer Sarit Haddad and her very beautiful song, Shema Yisrael Elohai, Hear Israel, My God. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Kshehalev bocher, rak Elohim shomea. Hakeev ole mitoch haneshama. Adam nofel lifnei shehu shokea. Bitfila ktana chote את הדממה שמע ישראל אלוהי אתה כל יכול נתת לי את חיי, נתת לי הכל. בעיניי דימה, הלב בוכה בשקט, וכשהלב שותק, הנשמה זועק.